हरिः ॐ सहनवतु सहनभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहैः ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay. Nanda informed the cowherds by Garga's words, which he understood to mean that Krishna was a child that but had some extraordinary qualities similar to the Lord. Nanda Maharaj said, "You should hear my words, which are potent since I heard from Garga. Your doubt should disappear about this boy." He makes it understood that Krishna is his child by using the word Arbake, or your doubts about your son should disappear. To increase the other cowherd men's affection for Krishna, he identifies Krishna as their son as well as his. Verses 16 to 22. Nanda Maharaj is quoting Garga Muni from 10.8, 13 through 19, with only a slight difference in the last verse. He directly quotes the Muni to instill faith in the cowherd men who accept the authority of Gargacharya. Garga Muni had said, because remember that Gargacharya, fearing that there would be a decrease in affection because of fear and respect, in realizing that Krishna was the Lord, by directly revealing that he had directly appeared to display unlimited qualities of the Lord, Garga had not directly stated Krishna's supreme position of power. Right? So he specifically didn't state it directly. Garga Muni had said, "Your son Krishna appears as an incarnation in every millennium. In the past he assumed three different colors, white, red, and yellow. And now he has appeared in a blackish color. For many reasons, the beautiful son of yours sometimes appeared previously as the son of Vasudeva. Therefore, those who are learned sometimes call this child Vasudeva." It says sometimes appears. So he didn't say specifically now that he had. Right? "For this son of yours, there are many forms and names according to his transcendental activities and qualities. Many forms, these are known to me, but people in general do not understand them. To increase the transcendental bliss of the cowherd men of Gokula, this child will always act auspiciously for you, and by his grace only you will surpass all difficulties. O Nanda Maharaj, as recorded in history, when there was an irregular, incapable government, Indra having been dethroned, and when honest people were being harassed and disturbed by thieves, this child appeared in order to curb the rogues and protect the people and enable them to flourish. Demons cannot harm the demigods who always have Lord Vishnu on their side. Similarly, any person or group attached to all auspicious Krishna cannot be defeated by enemies. Therefore, O Nanda Maharaj, this child of yours is as good as Narayana. In his transcendental qualities, opulence, name, fame, and influence, he is exactly like Narayana. Thus you should not be astonished by his activities." Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur elaborates, "Nanda wished to remove their present realization of Krishna's lordship and increase their understanding of him as their son, brother, and friend. Therefore, in repeating Garga's words, he does not say, 'your son,' but 'this boy,' so that the inhabitants would feel that Krishna was not only his son, but theirs as well. Though they had seen his powers, they should not give up their affection and should continue to give blessings to him daily." Quote, "Like Narayana," end quote, means that Narayana's power had entered Krishna, not that Krishna was Narayana. Right? So it's not against the philosophy, because we say when the avatari comes, all the avataras enter into him. So therefore, then the potency manifest by Narayan would be therefore in Krishna's form. And would be manifest. So killing the demons, all these kind of things, he does that as Narayana. So then it is keeping in line with what's been said. It's just being said in such a clever way that we will take it in another way. It was just like the jewel name Suryakanta, which is called thus because of some likeness to the sun. The child was not God, nor was he an ordinary human, but someone who could perform extraordinary deeds, right? Because he's not God. Because God means that's his mood in Vaikuntha. So Krishna in Braj does not take that mood, so he's not God. Right? But when he kills the demons and all that, then that potency of Narayana then is there, and you know, which is his, and then through that potency, that's how he kills the demons. So who they love is Krishna. And then he does all these activities because they're inherent in him. So they're still relating to Krishna, and Krishna's relating to them as Krishna. And then he's killing the demons as Narayan. So that's what they're appreciating. But they don't know that he's the avatari of Narayan. That's not important. Because that's also then looking at it that he's God. But so that's the supreme form of God. But Krishna in the mood of God then is not doing that as Krishna in Vrindavan. He's doing that as Narayan. Right? The child was not God, nor was he an ordinary human being, but someone who could perform extraordinary deeds. This great personality has come as the ornament of our family lineage. Thus, at the conclusion of his statement, Garga said, his activity should not be bewildering to you, right? Because that's just the way he is. So he's doing that out of affection, like he said. To increase the transcendental bliss of the coward men of Gokula, the child will always act auspiciously for you. So, if a demon needs to be killed, then he'll do that. You know, if a mountain needs to be lifted, he'll do that. Right? So all that, those kind of things he'll do. That's all going on. But, it should not be bewildering to you, because that's just what he's doing. Right? So it may be great and all this and that, because there's that aspect of that. That aspect of Narayan is there, and so he's doing all these great things. But he's as Nanda Baba is saying, he's your child, right? He's, you know, that. Because of his wonderful activities, you should not think of him as God. You should make him the object of your compassion by blessing him. Live a long life. You should not be neutral to him. Nanda then repeated Garga's statement: protect him well. By removing the cowherd men's bewilderment, the doubts were removed, right? Because parental ras means you're protecting the child, right? So that's why the kshatriyas, then they protect the citizens, right? Like that. So the parents, they protect the children. The husband protects the wife, right? Does that make sense? The vaishyas protect the cows. So that's that aspect of that relationship. So by him saying that you should protect him well means that relationship they have, that should be cultivated. Right? So it's not that he's God. He'll do all these amazing things, but that's just to give auspiciousness to the cowherd community. Nanda Maharaj continued, after Garga Rishi spoke these words to me and returned home, I began to consider that Krishna, who keeps us free from trouble, is actually an expansion of Lord Narayana. Srila Jiva Goswami reiterates, since I am his father, from that time I considered him to be like Narayana. I speculate that he is empowered by Narayana. So that's how he sees it. Right? You know, so he's an expansion, like a Shaktivesh avatar is a Jiva who's then empowered by Narayana. Like that. Sukadev Goswami continued, having heard Nanda Maharaj relate the statements of Garga Muni, the residents of Vrindavan became enlivened. Their perplexity was gone, and they worshipped Nanda and Lord Krishna with great respect. Right? So, Nanda Baba, you know, being at least because it's the men coming forward, not the ladies, right? So of the men, then he will be the most important. He's the leader amongst the men. And so if he's able to reconcile this and maintain his affection, which is greater than theirs, then their position they should be able to easily reconcile with Nanda Baba's understanding of this. And so then they have no problem. They can all then, have that particular, respect and worship, but at the same time it's all that aspect of affection. Right? So just it's according to the positions that's there. That makes sense? So it doesn't reduce their affection. Because its point is this, Krishna's doing this. He may be able to do, he's doing this because of his affection for the Brajvasis. How is he able to do it? Then they're seeing it because he's empowered by Narayan. But still, he's doing it just to please the cowherds. So in that way, he's not God, and he's not ordinary. You know, so he's special. The BBT purport states, Srila Jiva Goswami explains that in this verse, the word anarchuhu indicates that the residents of Vrindavan honored Nanda and Krishna with such offerings as fragrances, garlands, and garments brought from their homes. Srila Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur adds that the residents of Vrindavan honored Nanda and Krishna with loving offerings of jewels and gold coins. Apparently, Lord Krishna was playing in the forest when this conversation took place. So when he returned home, the residents of Vrindavan encouraged him by decorating him with beautiful yellow garments, necklaces, armlets, earrings, and crowns, and by shouting, all glories to the jewel of Vrindavan. Right? So it's about that relationship with him, that he does amazing things, that doesn't change. It just makes it more fun, it makes it more nice, more special. But it doesn't change their relationship. So this is how they can see him in an extraordinary position, but at the same not change the rasa. Because knowledge isn't the important part. The Aishwarya is not the important part. So they can do this. And we see is that they offer him things that he likes, what is pleasant to him. So they're offering him yellow garments, beautiful yellow garments, because that's what he wears. They're not saying, well, I like to wear this, so I'll offer that to Krishna. You can start with that. But we see as you get to the point where you want to offer Krishna what Krishna likes. So that's the idea. Right? Srila Prabhupada writes in Krishna book, when all the coward men had very attentively heard the statements of Gargacharya through Nanda Maharaj, they better appreciated the wonderful activities of Krishna and became very jubilant and satisfied. They began to praise Nanda Maharaj. Because of consulting him, their doubts about Krishna were cleared. Sukadeva Goswami continued, Indra became angry when his sacrifice was disrupted, and thus he caused rain and hail to fall on Gokula, accompanied by lightning and powerful winds, all of which brought great suffering to the cowherds, animals, and women there. When Lord Krishna, who is by nature always compassionate, saw the condition of those who had only him as their shelter, he smiled broadly and lifted Govardhan Hill with one hand, just as a small child picks up a mushroom to play with it. Holding up the hill, he protected the cowherd community. May he, Govinda, the lord of the cows and the destroyer of Indra's false pride, be pleased with us. Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura assigns verse 25 to Bhagavad Arkamrichimala, chapter 19, entitled The Perfection of the Mellow of Pure Love, the unlimited dimensions of rasa, siddha prema rasa, rasa garima, which is in the Prayojana section of the Thakura's book. So he's done all this just because of his affection for the cowherd devotees, right? And they then are interacting with him based on this pure love. So you see all these different dimensions of all the different things that Krishna did. Because all these things, Indra's wrong, then the cowherd men are being disturbed, then he lifts the hill. He does all these things just as various aspects of the prema that's shared between them. Srila Jiva Goswami concludes. Concluding this chapter, Sukadeva remembers the lifting of Govardhan and all the accompanying events in great bliss. Sukadeva remembers the pretext of destroying Indra's sacrifice in order that Krishna protect the people of Braja who had taken shelter of him. While meditating on him as the king of the cows, the object of his own love, realizing the great affection they had for him as the highest human goal, Understand that such love was the highest taste, and that it was solely dependent upon his mercy. Sukadeva prays for such love. Indra creating, so you see in all aspects it's Krishna, but is the highest goal, the understanding is the highest taste, and it was solely dependent on Krishna's mercy. So that's how, it's not by having this knowledge we'll get it, it's by getting Krishna's mercy. So by trying to appreciate the residents of Vrindavan and their love for Krishna, Krishna being pleased, then we may be awarded this kind of love for Krishna. But it's not because we have the knowledge or I studied it, now I deserve it. No, that's karma mimamsa. Krishna already went through that one. Right? So that was to get rid of the mundane concept, not to, you know, how you say, cultivate it, yes, enforce it, yes. Indra creating showers of rain produced fear created by his revengeful mood. His anger at having the sacrifice stop shows an even more frightful situation. The main fright is then described, the thunder, rain, hail, and wind. The cowherds, animals, and women were suffering, siddhat, from the thunder and storms. In that terrifying condition, they surrendered to Krishna. Directly seeing their condition, he was full of compassion. Though he was overcome with compassion, he showed bravery and was undisturbed, right? Because then in compassion, that has a certain softness to it and all that. Because in compassion, then there's that aspect of... Yeah. Though he was okay, so but he showed bravery anyway, right? So that chivalry and those kind of things, because generally the two don't go together, right? But here he showed it because that's what was going to accomplish the compassion. He showed bravery and was undisturbed. He smiled. He smiled scornfully at Indra. In that mood, he lifted Govardhan with his left hand only, though he was only a child. He lifted it like a mushroom without effort, and he held it up for 7 days and nights. Overcome with astonishment, joy, zeal, and conviction, Sukadeva then says, he protected Vraja. Then in joy and pride he says, Krishna was the conqueror of Indra's pride. Though Krishna was the king of the cows, he destroyed the pride of the king of the Devatas. This is spoken in derision. The position of king of the Devatas is included in his being the king of the cows. Just as rivers enter the ocean, right? So sometimes by saying one, you get many done. So you'll see this many times within the poetics of the devotees. When they're explaining things, they'll use one thing, but in it contains all the others. So they don't have to, you know, each one explain it each time. Right? Otherwise it loses some of the poetry. May Krishna show such love for me, Priyata. On attaining such love, I will attain the position of following the people of Vraja. He speaks of Krishna in the mood of the people of Vraja. He is the king of the cows or king of us people living in Gokula. This is shown to be his goal, as in the case of Brahma's prayers, Shruti says. As soon as he was born, Krishna began to have enemies and undertook many battles. In the form of Govardhan, he easily consumed piles of food. He stopped the attacking clouds because he held up the mountain easily. Rig Veda 10.1.13.4. Right? So, that's in the Veda. Because if you're going to talk about Indra, you're going to talk about how Indra's relationship with Krishna. Chapter 27. Lord Indra and Mother Sarabi offer prayers. Pratigya. In order to qualify oneself for pure devotional service, one must first act according to one's own position, directing one's consciousness to the Supreme Lord, giving up the sense of proprietorship, and become free from pride in the association of devotees. Adhyaya Prakashika. This chapter describes how the Sarabi cow and Indra, having seen the amazing power of Lord Krishna, performed a bathing ceremony for him. Ashamed of being attacked, ashamed of having attacked Vrindavan with a violent storm, Indra secretly came before Lord Krishna, offered obeisances, and praised him. Indra stated that although Sri Krishna is never caught in the current of material illusion, which is born of ignorance, he nevertheless accepts a human-like body and performs various activities to establish religious principles and chastise the wicked. By this means, he crushes the false prestige of those who presume themselves great controllers. Right? Because in this human-like form, then it appears that he's just ordinary. So then, because of their pride, then they, you know, get involved, and then they find out, no, he's still the Supreme Lord. Indra went on to declare that Krishna is the father, guru, and lord of all living entities, and that in the form of time he is the agent of their punishment. Satisfied with Indra's prayer, Sri Krishna told him that he had stopped the Indra Yajna so that Indra, puffed up as he was with false pride, would remember the Lord. So time is the agent of punishment. And so nowadays people are so focused on time, but not in relationship to Krishna, so then I guess their punishment is more, how you say, gets nicely increased. Satisfied with Indra's prayer, Sri Krishna told him that he had stopped the Indra Yajna so that Indra, puffed up as he was with false pride, would remember the Lord. Persons intoxicated by material opulence should never see him standing before them. Never see him standing before them with a rod of punishment in his hand. Therefore, Lord Krishna desires the actual good fortune of some person. He brings him down from the position of opulence. Because in opulence, you can't see it. That's the whole point. Because then your pride is so great. And that's the whole thing. Because if the pride is so great, then, you know, I'm the controller, I'm the enjoyer, like this. But when the pride becomes reduced, then one can give up that thing that I'm the controller and enjoyer. Lord Krishna ordered Indra to return to his proper position in heaven and to serve there without egotism, right? Because that's the problem. He was doing it with egotism. He's realized that. Now he goes back to his service. Not that he was doing the service, he made a mistake, and now, you know, someone else is going to be Indra. Right? That's not the actual way of running things. Because if you do that, then what happens, right? Now in the age of everyone's talking about truth, now how truthful can you be? Because as soon as the truth is out, then immediately you will be removed from any position or facility you have by this process of thinking like this, right? So if you use it to advantage, political advantage, to get rid of people you don't want because they made a mistake, then what happens? It's a trend. It's a practice. Therefore, if you do anything wrong, you will be removed also. So therefore, you have to hide and make sure that no one finds out. At the same time, how did you get the other guy? Oh, truth and transparency and openness and all this kind of thing, and use that to get them. But with yourself, you can't do that. So in other words, it creates an insecure position for everyone. So the Vedic system is, if the person understands the mistake, they go back to doing what they were because they have a nature. The only way to be engaged is according to nature. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like your horse is acting up and behaving badly. It's not that, you know, when you get him to calm down, now you get a new horse. No, then he goes back to doing his horse stuff. Because otherwise, what else could he do? Okay, now he's got to go to the kitchen and cut potatoes. You know, it's like that, you know. Huh? Oh, yeah, you do smashed potatoes, yeah. Yes.
Thank you. We have there's a saying that a person who can't manage his way out of a wet paper bag is open on both sides.
I haven't heard the open on both sides. I only heard about a wet paper bag. That makes it
really
even.
Don't have a track record for a certain service or proclivity. Maybe they should try something else.
Yeah, it means in the modern thing, because we're trying all this nice corporate stuff. In the corporate world today, you have 90 days to prove yourself. And if you don't, then go find something else to do. Back in the 90s, when they first took up the corporate kind of mood, then they were more general. They'd give you 180 days. But now it's only 90 days. People don't have the patience. So, yes, so it's that's the position, is that one has to see what it can be done. And so, since then, in the position that the standards of Krishna consciousness and pure devotional service are the highest principle, and seeing to that and practicing that is the highest purpose of this movement. Because if you look at the purposes of the movement, it's all about taking association, giving association, practicing what one's learned in that association, understanding pure devotional service, making facility for that in the way of the temples and that, knowledge about it in the way of books, making a place to practice this nicely, the Dham, you know, like Mayapur, like this. So all these things are all about that. So that means that the topmost position must be about establishing that. And so then you can find that then anybody who's serious about Krishna consciousness and committed could take up that responsibility. But, because that's not, that doesn't require any material qualifications. It simply requires a commitment to Krishna consciousness, study of Prabhupada's books, trying to apply that in their own life and others. Prabhupada says leadership means being consistently inspired, you know, in devotional service, and the ability to make others consistently inspired. That's actually leadership. Then management means that your ability to actually manipulate the material energy to get specific results. So, therefore, those who can be leaders then lead in that capacity. And then you have things go very nicely. But only those who can manage should be given that aspect. And management's not the top. It's leadership is the top. So then if that is understood, then all the problems that you talk about will go away. But if we take the management's the top, then everybody wanting to be the top, then it's not going to happen. I'm sure that you could probably, continuing the... Because I had understood it as a wet paper bag where they were put inside. It's closed at the end and the top, then you roll down. But because it's wet, you should be able to poke your finger and get out with the can. But if it's open at both ends, then you could probably take it, you could probably open it all the way around and just cover them with a wet piece of paper, and they still wouldn't be able to get out. So, therefore, the idea is if leadership is understood for what it actually is, then any senior devotee will be able to accomplish that position and do it very nicely, inspire others. And then those who are managers, they'll do the management, and they'll be inspired by this leadership. Then everything goes perfectly. That's the system given by the acharyas. That's the Vedic system. But to take it and put the managers at the top, then they already tried that, you know, and Parasaram didn't seem to agree. And he expressed his dissatisfaction 21 times. Right? But those who escaped and went to Europe, then they're still trying to do that to this day. You know? So, yeah, it's a disease. But it's not the Vedic system. And even in the modern, it doesn't work. So it just doesn't work. Otherwise, then, yeah.
Thank you. How much useful is it for Brahmins to get involved in management? Because sometimes there's stipulations like a spiritual master should or could give pretty specific guidance to his disciples.
Well, it depends if it's based on the spiritual understanding and how to apply that spiritual understanding into Krishna consciousness in the situation they're in. Then yes, they can get down to whatever detail to use as an example. But as far as the management of the disciples, that's in the area of wherever the disciple is. Because that's why the local management is there. That's what they do. The idea of management is so that the spiritual aspects can go on in a very grand scale. So therefore it's organized. So you know who does what and this and that. But it's not about that the spiritual master manages the disciples. No, the local manager manages them. He can give the spiritual instruction to inspire them and the local managers. That's the system. It's not that that's an opinion or that is the system. That's how the Shastras describe it. That's how everything goes. If you look at any of the traditional things, that's how it works. You know, it doesn't work another way. You know, you don't have any examples of it. Only examples of what's non-Vedic and what's not appreciated by the Lord. That's the only time it does like that.
So where does the faulty mentality come in when the guru wants to control and have his contingency follow his
It just comes down to the same common mistake as I'm the controller and enjoyer. It comes from there. And so then when you have, especially if you have these leftover burnt remnants of genes of those who escaped out of, you know, how you say, out of India, went to Central Asia, bumped around there for a while, and then invaded Europe at some point or another, then the tendency is to kind of have that. In general, everybody will have it because they want to control everything. That's just what the living entity, you know, is like. So it's just a matter of understanding that that is not the system, and that's why Prabhupada saved us by giving us the actual system. And you see is that those who do follow it, then they get great results. They have, you know, I mean, it's like unimaginable of beyond anybody else. It's like let's say one zone in or one area in Western India. Every year you come back, there's another like 1,000 devotees. And these are, you know, chanting 16 rounds, this, professionals, you know, like that. These aren't just, you know, they're not hippies, right? And because they follow that position of just getting involved on that spiritual platform, and the management's left up to the managers. Now, if the managers are considering spiritual considerations in it, that they'll get involved. But as far as the actual decision and application, and you know, what's the best thing, that they won't get involved. But the principle of that, you have to be doing this to protect the devotees. You can't do it because it's an advantage. Okay, we'll save some money, or it'll take, you know, 1 week less, but in doing so, it'll disturb the devotees. They'll say you can't do that. So they'll have to think of another plan, and then they'll enact it. So to that much is advice. That's why you see the Brahmins to the kings. They don't manage the kingdom. They just give him advice. He takes the decision because he takes the responsibility. So when the king makes a decision and applies that, then from that, and then the people are prosperous, then 1/6 of their pious credits go to the king, not to those Brahmins. Right? It goes to the king because he made the decision and he applied it. But the king respects the Brahmanas for having guided him in that way, so then, you know, it all works out. Is that, yeah. It's extremely simple, but somehow or another, to most, it seems to be like, you know, nuclear physics or something, but it's actually really straightforward. Yes? No? Okay. Lord Krishna ordered Lord Indra to return to his proper position in heaven and to serve there without egotism. Indra, along with the cow Sarabi, then performed a bathing ceremony for Krishna, using the water of the heavenly Ganges and the milk of Mother Sarabi. Indra and the cow took this opportunity to bestow upon the Lord the name Govinda, and the demigods showered flowers and recited various prayers. Right, so here, just Ganga water and milk is all. It means the Sarabi cow could come up with anything, right? You know, he could bathe Krishna in gold coins or whatever it is. You know, it's like she doesn't have a problem with that, but they just milk. And the water of the Ganga. So that's why this simple, just bathing with water or just water and milk. You know, so you pour some water, then pour milk, do that, then again water. Then that's nice. And then if you want to go for a big festival, then you have the Panchamrita, Panchagavya, all these kind of things. But it's, so, you know, milk is good. It's not that, oh, that's cheap. You know. No, it's good. Shloka Anusharanam. Verses 1 to 13. Indra prays to Lord Krishna. 14 to 17. Sri Krishna instructs Indra. 18 to 21. Mother Sarabi's request. 22 to 28. The Abhishek ceremony of Sri Govinda. Right? So from this time, then he's known as Govinda. I mean, those who know, then they'll be maybe saying before, but he'll actually be called this from this time. Verses 1 to 13. Indra prays to Lord Krishna. Sukadeva Goswami said, after Krishna had lifted Govardhan Hill and thus protected the inhabitants of Braja from the terrible rainfall, Sarabi, the mother of the cows, came from her planet to see Krishna. She was accompanied by Indra. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates. Govardhana means increasing the cows. With the help of the mountain, the cows did not fall into suffering because of the great rain, but rather nourished because of the abundant grass. Braja refers to the people, animals, birds, and birds there as well. Goloka is a planet above Vaikuntha. It is the planet of cows. This is described by Indra and Hari Vamsa. Right? So she comes from the planet of her planet. Right? Then this is that's Goloka. Right? So it's her planet, and Krishna lives there. You know, that's where he wants to live. Above the heavenly planets is Brahmaloka, Vaikuntha, worshipped by the Vedas, the sages, and Garuda and others. It is the goal of Shiva, of the liberated souls and the devotees. Above this is the planet of cows, protected by the perfected devotees. O Krishna, it is all-pervading, great, attained after realization of the Lord. So Brahmaloka then, for those who are Vaishnavas, Brahmaloka means Vaikuntha, or the spiritual world, like that. For the impersonalist, Brahmaloka will mean the Brahman, and for the Karmis, it will mean Satyaloka, Lord Brahma's planet. So depending upon, and yogis especially, that's what how they'll interpret. So we see here, there's Brahmaloka, or the spiritual world, so Vaikuntha, and then above that is then Goloka. And all these great personalities, the Vedas, the sages, Garuda and others, the goal of Shiva, the liberated souls, the devotees, they all worship this transcendental realm, or Brahmaloka. Does that make sense? Yeah. Lord Krishna says, I move about in many forms on earth, in Vaikuntha and in eternal Goloka, O Kunteya. Mahabharata 12:330-68. Wow, right at the end. I worship the Supreme Lord Govinda, who, though regarding all the inhabitants as his very self, resides in Goloka exclusively with the young gopis, who are embodiments of Madhura Rasa. He accepts them as his wives, while they respond to his conjugal affection reciprocally. Brahma Samhita 5:48. Vaikuntha Loka, Brahma Loka, etc. are explained in Bhagavatamrita. Sarabi and Indra came. Sarabi is the prototype cow, among the chief cows situated in Goloka. Indra saw her coming from Goloka to Govardhan in joy because Krishna had protected the cows of her lineage. Indra showed her affection, pleased her with devotion, and with her name came from Swarga to Krishna. Right, so Sarabi was coming down to meet Krishna and to thank him for having saved all the cows in her lineage. And so Indra, seeing this, then he took advantage of the situation. And then, you know, because he's feeling bad, he praised her, he worshipped her and all this, and then came with Sarabi. Because if he came on his own, who knows? Krishna might not even look at him or talk at him. You know, because you can't harass the devotees and everything's going to go all right. Does that make sense? Yeah. Indra showed her affection, pleased her with devotion, and with her he came from Swarga to Krishna. The wife of Kasyapa, Indra's stepmother, Sarabi, lives in Swarga. She is a different Sarabi, since she does not live in Goloka. So we're talking about different. Yeah. Indra should not have come, since he was in fear and shame because of his great offense. But even he came to take shelter of Krishna because Krishna is directly Bhagavan. He came to Krishna because Krishna is only controlled by his devotees. He came because of association with such devotees. So by this association with Sarabi and other devotees, then he is able to appreciate. For Sarabi, Krishna was the attractor of everyone, the giver of the highest bliss, through his form and qualities. Eva indicates that Indra came alone, giving up his carrier and followers, and out of fear and humility, right? So, because normally he comes on his elephant, he comes with all his associates, you know, it's a whole entourage. But here he just came himself on foot, right? The details are given by Vaishampayana. Indra saw Krishna, who takes away all suffering, seated at the base of Govardhana. Seeing the indestructible boy, shining with great effulgence, wearing cowherd clothing, Indra developed love for him. He repeatedly gazed at Krishna, dark like a water-laden cloud, marked with the Srivatsa. Garuda, best of birds, who was invisible, gave shade to Krishna with his wings as he sat. So that's an interesting thing. So, you know, Garuda is there, so he's taking care. So that means The cowherd boys are there with him, and so they went to shade and all that, but they're just playing. They're just boys. So there's no elaborate arrangement. So Sridham is an expansion as Garuda, then as an invisible form, is there as shading them from the sun. Right. So this all goes on. Right. Sukadev Goswami, but the point is that they just stay in that normal mood that they're in. You know, we may think, oh wow, see, this is so much better. But the point is it's not. It's that Sridham keeps his position. That's better. That's the taste. Right? It's just, you have to get the work done, but it's without disturbing the environment. Sukadev Goswami continued, Indra was very ashamed of having offended the Lord. Approaching him in a solitary place, Indra fell down and lay his helmet, whose effulgence was as brilliant as the sun, upon the Lord's lotus feet. Srila Jiva Goswami comments, Indra met him in a solitary place, since the Devatas had no arrangements for publicly appearing in Gokula, and it would be easier to ask forgiveness in private. Because you don't know what the coward boys are going to say. One, they're going to goof on him like that. Because, you know, look at the guy with 1,000 eyes. You know, they're going to be rolling on the ground. But. Krishna was there alone, since he went there on some pretext on seeing him come with Sarabi from far off in the sky. On the advice of Sarabi that it would be better that he meet Krishna alone in a humble mood, Indra met Krishna alone without her. Another reason was that he was ashamed because he had offended the Lord by bad words and actions. He lay on the ground with his crown touching Krishna's feet. Because of the splendor of Krishna's feet, Indra's crown shone like the sun. Right? So we're saying it's brilliant like the sun, but that's because of Krishna's feet. Right? So the effulgence of Krishna's toenails was making Indra's crown as brilliant as the sun. It's not that the crown itself was that special. Sukadev Goswami continued, not saying it wasn't polished nicely, it's just that his effulgence was coming from Krishna's feet. Sukadev Goswami continued, Indra had now heard of and seen the transcendental power of omnipotent Krishna, and his false pride in being the Lord of the three worlds was thus defeated. Holding his hands together in supplication, he addressed the Lord as follows. Srila Sanatana Goswami elaborates, Indra experienced Krishna, who had unlimited prowess, by seeing the Supreme Brahman in human form, as Krishna, the young cowherd, when he lifted Govardhan and had heard about him from Brahma. Though Indra had a brilliant crown in front of Krishna, whose toe tips shone with greater brilliance than a million suns, he was like a firefly in the daylight. Immediately he lost his pride in being master of the three worlds, right? Because he's so effulgent, because he's the prominent of the devatas, means of those who are managing and stuff like that. And so then, you know, his brilliance, his potency, everything will be greater. And so then he shines forth very brightly, and therefore his pride. But in front of Krishna, then it's like a firefly in the day. You can't even see the firefly, right? It means fireflies are around, you just don't see them. Like that. I think sometimes in the Gurukul there'd be a bush there or something, and you see the fireflies in the day flying by. You can see them then. You know, so they're still doing their thing, but in the day no one notices. So it only at night then you see, oh, then they're making light. Yeah. Because of Krishna's unlimited power, Indra gave up his pride in ruling the three worlds, because he's the three worlds, and technically it's only because the Satyaloka, then they, you know, because they're Brahmins, so he manages. So he manages, but it's not that he's actually in control of them. They just, you know, cooperate. And that's then one universe, and this is the smallest one. Then you have unlimited others, which Krishna controls, and that's just by his breathing. He just breathes in, he breathes out, and like that. Because he had seen the Govardhan pastime and heard about Krishna through scriptures, he spoke according to that experience. Thus his praise should be excellent. Thus his praise would be excellent. King Indra said, your transcendental form, a manifestation of pure goodness, is undisturbed by change, shining with knowledge and devoid of passion and ignorance. In you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, which is based on illusion and ignorance. Saying Srila Jiva Goswami comments, understanding that the Lord was not angry at his offense by seeing his naturally happy face, and being relieved, he began to praise Krishna. Right. So now what happened? He heard about Krishna, and then he reacted so badly, right? Because the modes of passion, the in you does not exist the mighty flow of the modes of material nature, right? But in Indra, there did. So the flows of material nature was very strong in him, and the passion and ignorance. So he spoke badly, he acted badly. But seeing Krishna, that he's not affected by that, then he feels has that aspect of surrender. So that's the difference. The demons see this, but don't surrender. So they just keep fighting. And even though he defeats them, because he's the supreme, they think that it's not possible because they're the supreme. So they think of a new method how they're going to try to defeat the Lord. And it just keeps going on as long as it's fun for Krishna. And then at one point when the demigods get too freaked out, then he removes the obstacle. First he speaks in order to get forgiveness for his offense. You should not be angry with me since I was bewildered by your maya and stuck in the material world as a continual offender. Vishuddha sattva is a function of the Shakti and is related to material sattva as its cause. Right? So material sattva comes from the pure goodness. Right? So the devotion then gives rise to, because in devotion you do everything connected to Krishna, right? Out of affection. In goodness you do everything connected to Krishna because that's the rule. You want to follow the rule. Is that what you say? Like that. Because Shastra says, and so therefore you do it. But Krishna is the Shastra. Krishna gives the Shastra. Krishna is the activities of the Shastra, the results of the Shastra. So it's still in pursuit of, you know, goodness. But it's not pure in that the reason you're doing that is for things in passion and ignorance, so material benefits. The pure goodness means you're using those same activities, those same religious activities, but you're using them just because they nicely express your love for Krishna. That's what's done. And not that something else is going to. Right? Does that make sense? So it's how it moves according to Scripture. That's how it makes it work. Does that make sense? But that's natural, spontaneous for the residents of the spiritual world. Here you have to learn it and adjust your life. But the point is you're adjusting it for Krishna.
This particular argument many times during this present regarding that I was bewildered by Krishna's maya, you know. Therefore, I'm not responsible for whatever activity I've done. So many times this is...
That's okay. That they understand they're not, but then can they maintain an attitude or do they have to be humble?
They have to be humble.
Yeah, so if they're saying that with attitude, then it's, you know, it's like the story of the man who killed the cow. No? It's been that long. Oh, okay. So, once there was this man, and he had this garden. He was into his garden, and he really made it. He put in a lot of work in his garden. So he had made it beautiful, really, really nice and all that. And then one day, this cow came into the garden and started eating all these nice things. And he got really upset and he killed the cow. And he buried it in the corner of the garden. Right? So then, at the time of his, you know, death, then the Yamadutas came to him and said, okay, let's go. And he says, why? I'm not a sinful person. Look at this nice garden and everything. He says, no, you killed the cow. So you're sinful. You're coming with us. He says, no, but I didn't kill the cow. It's the modes of nature and all that. So the modes, they all made this arrangement and all. And so how can I be blamed for the arrangement of these modes? Like that. You know, it's just the cycle of samsara and that. So I'm just being washed along. You can't blame me. So the Yamadutas were bewildered. So they went back to Yamaraj. And so then Yamaraj said, okay, I understand. And so then he came along with them. But he came on his own, you know, so, and separate, so they didn't know. He just came as this, I think, you know, typically as he does, I think, a young boy. And came into the garden, wow, what a nice garden and all that. And the man is, his ego's getting inflated. Wow, who did this nice arrangement of these flowers here and that? That's so amazing, I've never seen that before. No, I did that, you know, like that. And, you know, and, oh, what about this? Did this just go naturally? No, I did. I put all the different things and made it grow like that, and that's why it looks like that. What about this over here? here and all that. Yeah, yeah, no, I did all that. And this here, yes, me. And who killed the cow? And so then the Yamadutas took him away. So, yes, if you take the humble position that I'm not, so therefore I was defeated by Krishna's Maya. But is that what's pleasing to Krishna? It's pleasing to Krishna that he defeats you with his Maya, and then you, that's the rasa with you and Krishna. Yes, so therefore, as I've been defeated, and I'm not supposed to be defeated, so if I take shelter of Krishna, I won't be, so I have to improve the quality of my devotional service. But at the same time as that person who says it's just the modes of nature, then they also have to apply that with everybody else, which you may not necessarily find they do. Means the ones that don't, then they're the ones that don't understand. It's pride. The ones that do, they see that everybody's mistake is just the modes of nature, and so therefore it can't be taken too seriously, as long as they understand and are situated nicely in devotional service. Right? In other words, chastisement is only there until one understands the position and takes back up the proper devotional attitude. Once that's there, there is no purpose to chastisement in devotional service. To the materialist, yes, they want to just keep going because of their sense of revenge and retribution, so they won't stop. In fact, even if it's crossed beyond what's actually recommended in Shastras, they have to keep it going because they have this idea that you can actually eternally be happy in the material world, and so therefore then punishment should be eternal. Mm-hmm. So it's just pure unalloyed illusion like that. The point is punishment's only as much as someone becomes revives their Krishna consciousness. Now, if you're dealing with materialists who are not Krishna conscious, then retribution is according to scripture and as much as scripture says. But for devotees, it's only you only use that technique up to the point that they understand. So since Indra has already understand, do we see Krishna doing any punishment at this point? No. The punishment was he was unsuccessful and he broke his pride. That was the punishment. So, but once it's there, then one that compassionate mood is there. But if at that point, then one is you know, wanting retribution and I told you so and all this, that's actually according to Manu, who is the book on retribution, they say that's sinful. That attitude is actually a sinful attitude. So it's not. That's why only those who are, improved in mind, they can actually apply a punishment. People who are vengeful and this and that, and they're actually banned from applying retribution, because they're thinking it will only affect the person that it's being applied on. But unfortunately, it will destroy them, their family, their friends, their dentist, their psychologist, anybody connected with them. If you have a connection with them, you hear somebody is offending Vaishnavas, better you distance yourself from them, because otherwise, if you have a connection, identify, that offense that they made will affect you also. That's just how it works. You know what I'm saying? That's just the meaning of it. So you can't get involved in these things. So therefore, those that don't have improved minds, they're not allowed actually to use punishment. You know, maybe on an ordinary scale, you know, you take the cookie, you get your hand gets slapped. Okay, that's okay. But that you could think that I, from the position of governance and from the position of religious righteousness, try to establish it, it'll only destroy you and everybody connected to you. You know, that includes your stuff also, everything. Like that, what was it, Ramachandra Khan? The village was destroyed, right? And they probably didn't even know what was going on. Point is he identified with that village. He was the man in the village. So therefore, anything connected to him. So that's why, Chanakya mentions that you have such a kingdom, filled with bad leaders or fools, better to go find a different place. You know, but nowadays the whole place is like that, so you just find a place that's less bad, that's all. Because the whole world's like that. Yeah. But the point is that's something that's applied every time, because I'm not the doer, so I made the wrong choice in where I was putting my attention and my attraction. Therefore, the modes of nature carried us away. So it's being affected by the modes. But we have to acknowledge that I did make the commitment to following that process of modes. So in that way, I haven't done anything. But at the same time, as neither has anybody else. Krishna points that out to Arjuna. Nobody's killing anybody here. Right? Because the soul's not involved. The body's killing the body, but the soul's not involved. But it's a transcendental position. It's not a clever political trick. Like that. Yes?
A person may stop their sinful activity, but the mentality that caused it takes a longer time to...
Yes.
To actually move out.
Yes.
So is that person still considered sinful or just prone to such kind of activities?
Yeah.
If the mentality doesn't change, like arrogance.
Yeah, pride. Means that they're prone to it. They're not sinful because they're situated in devotional service, but it's just that's what's left over. It's just like you have a gold ring and it's dropped in the mud. But all the mud's not off, but it's still a gold ring. But it's a dirty gold ring, so it needs some cleaning. So then what has to see is that the only way to clean the mirror of the mind is through devotional service. So that's the Sampkirtan mission, right? So the seven tongues of the Sampkirtan mission, that's how the heart is cleansed. So now that cleansing process can only go on if you're engaged in devotional service, and engaged in devotional service is according to your nature. So that's why, unless being engaged in according to what service you had will immediately cause a deviation again, then only you might put them in another situation, but then the emphasis is on good association. So then they may be doing things that aren't necessarily what they'd be doing as a standard thing, but they're associating their sadhana, and they're with senior Vaishnavas who can give direction and discuss, and then in that they can have more of a realization. Then they go back to that position. Like, of course, if that is their service, if it's your wet paper bag principle, then it should be understood as, you know, stay away from wet paper bags, right? You know, you should do something else that their nature would match. But otherwise, then it's they would go back to that position, because then in it, by doing devotional service, by advancing there, that's the only thing that will get rid of it. But we think no, they shouldn't do the service. That would get rid of it. But that's like a pile of garbage in the corner, and you just put a cloth over it. And see, it's nice. It's a colorful cloth. You know, matches the curtains, and you know, so it's not. That's for the wet paper bag ballers.
So that's why Indra keeps the job, even though he keeps on messing up and running into the same snag.
Yeah, yeah.
Or do we just have a time wrap where we just, in the Bhagavatam, get all the highlights of his...
We get the highlights, and you're talking about all the Indras for last 151 trillion years.
Yeah.
So it's not that one Indra is doing... Huh?
It's not like happening every week.
No, it's not that one Indra's done all these things. One Indra did the Govardhan thing, one Indra doesn't. So what's happening during the pastimes of Krishna, when he's there, that's one Indra. But then getting the thousand eyes, that's a different one. You know, the thing with him hiding in the lotus stem, you know, killing Vishnu, that's another one. So you have 14 in one day of Brahma. You know, we're already 50 years through his life, so that's a lot of Indras. That's, you know, 250,000 Indras up to now. So you're getting, like you said, the highlights of, you know, major, highs and lows like that, you know, because, you know, that's always better. Who wants to go through the blow-by-blow one? They want just the highlights, right, you know, like that. So,
actual change of heart is by...
Actual?
The real change of heart.
Change of heart, okay.
That is by living entity's endeavor, or is Krishna's?
It has to be one or the other. Mm-hmm. Means you do absolutely nothing and just Krishna one day decides, well, why not this guy? Or it's because you got in there, you did it fully and all that, and then according to, you know, Jaimini, then Krishna has to reciprocate because you did the work. You deserve it. Okay, let us give an example. Okay, someone's in the bottom of a well. Okay? You throw them a rope. Okay? What are you going to do?
Because
okay, but that the point is what is your part in this process? pulling on the rope. Okay? So, now it's just because you pulled on the rope, or it's because they hold on also? Right? But the point is, the guy holding on, you can have a rope drop it into the well, and he can hold on to it, and you're not pulling it, is it going to get anywhere? So it's both. Because the devotee is surrendering to Krishna, then Krishna, being pleased, reciprocates. That's the way it is in anything, even the materials. You're following the laws of nature according to Krishna's direction, therefore you get the results. It's not because you deserve it, because you did the work. No, it's he's pleased. So even the materialist, he's in the position he's in because he's done something to please Krishna. Problem is that he doesn't consistently please Krishna, and that's why then, you know, the IRA comes along and walks off with it. Right? Does that make sense?
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Natai Gaura Prabhupada ki.